What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Tuesday, December 18th, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Ceretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film Senior Writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And writer Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Okay, guys, we, it's slow news week because we're entering the holiday week, and Hollywood kind of shuts down early. But we do have a bunch of things to talk about today, and we're going to open with some sad news, and that is that Penny Marshall has died. Penny Marshall is obviously an actress, director, and producer. She is probably best known for playing Laverne in Laverne and Shirley in the late 70s, early 80s, which she won three Golden Globe Awards. She progressed to directing in the 80s and directed some big films. Her first film was Jumping Jack Flash, but she directed Big, which was the first film directed by a woman to ever gross more than $100 million at the U.S. box office. She directed Awakenings, Riding Car with Boys, A League of Their Own, Renaissance Man, and she produced films like Cinderella Man and Bewitched. I grew up watching Big and A League of Their Own. Those were movies that were on repeat at my household, and we don't have an official cause of death, but I believe a few years ago, in 2010, she had been diagnosed with lung cancer that had metastasized to her brain. But then in 2012, it was reported that she was in remission. So I'm guessing, like everybody in this world, cancer, finally took her. Ben, do you have any memories of Penny Marshall?
I grew up watching Big as well. That was a big one for me and my family, no pun intended. Jumpin' Jack Flash, I actually have fond memories of, even though, because I also watched that movie as a kid. That came out in 1986, and I think I must have seen it probably when I was 12 or something. And I haven't revisited it since, but I remember really, really liking that movie. I have no idea how it holds up. I'm embarrassed to say I've never seen A League of Their Own. That's like one of my big sports movie blind spots. I don't know. I grew up playing baseball, so you would think that I would have just seen it and sort of absorbed it through osmosis at some point. But I never saw that movie. So in Penny Marshall's honor, maybe now is finally the time for me to get around to making time for that one. But she was great.
Yeah, I feel like that was one of the movies in like the 90s that was on HBO on repeat, and it just like on my TV at all times. Chris, how about you?
I mean, yeah, out of all of those, I think League of Their Own is my favorite. I actually think A League of Our Own is probably like the best baseball movie ever made. Like, I can't think of, like, I mean, there are obviously a lot of good baseball movies, but I honestly think that's like the most entertaining of all of them ever made. Like, that's the one. If someone says, think of a baseball movie, that's the one that would immediately spring to my mind is A League of Their Own.
This week,
Peter, it looks like she had a documentary in post-production called Rodman about Dennis Rodman. So I wonder what's going to happen with that. I have no idea. I've never heard of that project before, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, interesting. This week is also the week that they typically release the Blacklist, which – I'm sure many people out there don't know. We live in Hollywood, so we hear about this every year. But Ben, tell us what The Blacklist is.
Yeah, so The Blacklist is an annual list that it's basically the best unproduced screenplays of any given year. And this has been going on for a long, long time. And it surveys like a bunch of film executives and assistants and agents and all that kind of stuff. At least that's what it did in the past. I think this year it looks like it's surveyed over 300 executives who basically just vote on their favorite scripts of the past year that didn't get produced yet. And a lot of times it's stuff that definitely will get produced in the future. Like Inglourious Basterds was on there 1 year, for example. And I think it just made the list because technically it was completed in that year and sort of like made the rounds to all the agencies, but didn't actually get produced within that calendar year. And then other times,
although
it'll be...
it should be noted, when this list started in 2004, it was rather small, and a lot of those projects, you know, were things that probably wouldn't have gotten made. So, like, you know, it has become that thing where, like, it has a lot of stuff that's going to get made at this point. But if in its early years, you know, it helped, you know, get movies like Juno and stuff made.
Right. And so this year, the list came out yesterday, and we sort of broke down all of the entries, and they're all organized by votes and all that stuff. But there are some really fascinating sounding projects here. So one of the ones that I wanted to highlight is called Harry's All Night Hamburgers. It's written by Steve Desmond and Michael Anthony Sherman. And I'll read the synopsis real quick. A down on his luck high school senior discovers that the old roadside diner outside of town is secretly a hangout for parallel universe travelers. He sets off on a mind-bending adventure across the multiverse that takes him beyond his wildest dreams. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff is just logline based and, you know, they give you the writer. And if you don't know anything about these writers, all you have to go on is this one or two sentence summary. So it's kind of like a perfect version of the movie as it exists right now in your mind, because the possibilities are really endless for a lot of these things. It's like, man, this could be great. This could be, you know, a direct-to-DVD disaster. But right now, all of it sounds kind of magical. So,
yeah. And that logline is like so broad and vague that it, you know, it sounds so magical. Like you're filling in, you know, the gaps, you know, between the lines in your mind.
Yeah, for sure.
It should be mentioned that the one that got the most votes was this script called Frat Boy Genius by Alyssa Karasik.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about a disgruntled employee of Snapchat that tells the rise of her former Stanford classmate, preeminent douchebag, and current boss, Evan Spiegel. So basically, it sounds like it's The Social Network for Snapchat. Are we ready for the Snapchat movie?
I mean, if it's as good as The Social Network, then yeah, bring it on.
I mean, yeah, I want to immediately say no Snapchat movie. But yeah, the Social Network is always that great example of, oh, they're making a Facebook movie? That sounds dumb. And then it's like one of the best movies of the 21st century. So I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I'm not that excited about the Snapchat movie at the moment.
If you're not excited about that, Chris, how about Drudge by Cody Broder? And this is the story of how oddball internet reporter Matt Drudge broke the Lewinsky scandal and nearly took down a presidency, all from a desktop computer in his one-bedroom apartment in Hollywood.
I mean, that really depends on how they portray Matt Drudge, because the Drudge Report is awful. It's like, you know, this conservative, far-right shithole that just publishes really inflammatory stuff. So if they're trying to make a movie where he's like some heroic like journalist, I don't want to see that. But if it's a movie that points out, you know, how crazy everything is, then yeah, maybe that'd be interesting. If it's critical of him, I will see that.
I hate to dismiss journalism, but I just picture the movie being like a 1 minute short with him in his bedroom, and he receives an email and he just like posts it on the blog, and then it's the end. Okay, I know that was so dismissive of what.
Yeah, I don't know what that story could be. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. No, I don't want to see it. Get it off the blacklist.
Ben, what are some other interesting ones?
There's one called Get Home Safe that's written by Christy Hall, and the logline is, a young woman must get home by herself on Halloween with no cell phone battery and a group of Gamergate trolls out to get her. So that sounds pretty inflammatory.
People out there like know what Gamergate is? Like, I'm sure our listeners do, but like, does mainstream America know what Gamergate is?
I think there are articles on it and stuff, so I think they have like a general idea. I don't think they realize how pervasive and toxic it was, but maybe that's why we need a movie like this to inform the masses.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And maybe it's just used as sort of shorthand in this description, but in the movie, it won't necessarily get into like all of the origins of Gamergate and all that stuff, because that would sort of bring a movie to a halt. But there's one called King Richard that is written by Zach Balin. It's the true story of Richard Williams, the hard-nosed and uncompromising father of tennis prodigies turned superstars, Venus and Serena Williams. So that one is very high up there in the votes. One that's a little lower that I'm interested in is called Queen and Slim, and it's written by Lena Waithe. It's the story of a black man and a black woman whose first date goes awry. After they're pulled over by a police officer at a traffic stop, after killing the police officer in self-defense, they decide against turning themselves in and go on the run. So that sounds really interesting, and Lena Waithe is like a super fascinating up-and-coming filmmaker, writer, TV, actress extraordinaire. So I'm all on board for whatever she has coming up.
You know, there's a lot of like biopics and stories of true stories that involved like politics and stuff like that on these blacklists. One of the scripts on here, I think Chris was mocking this in our Slack channel yesterday, is called The Kings of Cool by John Dorsey. And the log line for this is, during segregation in the 1960s American South, a nerdy teen tries to win a student election at an all-black high school. But he'll have to defeat a blossoming badass named Samuel L. Jackson to do so, based on a true story.
Yes.
why do you hate this, Chris?
All right. I'm not going to say I hate it, but first of all, who are you possibly going to cast to play young Samuel L. Jackson? Like, there's only one Samuel L. Jackson. I can't imagine anyone playing him, even if he's supposed to be like, young.
Well, they're already using de-aging technology in Captain Marvel, so maybe he could play himself.
All right, if they do that, then I'm all in on this movie.
Oh my god. Him as playing a 16-year-old version of himself, that would be incredible.
Yeah, that I would see. But my other complaint is, like, this movie is, based on that description, it's told from the point of view of the nerd, but who the hell would watch a movie and root for some nerd over Samuel L. Jackson? Like, they would just be like, oh, I can't wait for Samuel L. Jackson to beat that nerd. Like, it should be reversed. It should be about Samuel L. Jackson beating some nerd. That should be the literal plot of the movie. Samuel Jackson beats a nerd, the movie.
There's another one that was horrible on here that I want to bring up. And it's called Please Maternity Leave. And this is a comedy, I assume it's a comedy, about two friends who try to get their third friend pregnant so that they can stop hanging out with her.
Huh.
No, like,
I mean, well, that punny title is terrible, but I actually could see this actually being okay if they play it like really, really dark, like if it's an extremely dark comedy. But if they try and make like this a light thing, then it would be terrible.
Here's one that I just noticed, Peter, that sounds kind of like a Blumhouse movie in the making. It's called AMA, Ask Me Anything by John Wickstrom. A highly publicized AMA, like a Q&A session, between a fast-rising publicist and an aging music icon quickly turns into a deadly game of cat and mouse when the event is seized by a hacker who systematically begins revealing dark secrets from both of their pasts, forcing them to publicly confront the horrific events they've committed on the largest social media platform in the world.
That sounds like it's going to be one of those computer screen movies where it's like all on the computer screen.
Screen life, baby.
Yeah, I guess that's what we're calling it now.
And then there's this other one, Little Fish by Mattson Tomlin, which is about a couple who are fighting to hold the relationship together as a memory loss virus spreads and threatens to erase the history of their love and courtship. So that sounds very like, I guess, Eternal Sunshine-ish. To me,
yeah, a lot of these the pattern here is, you know, if the things aren't biopics, a lot of them just sound like they're following this template where it's like take an everyday thing and then throw some weird fantasy element into it. Like, it's Bob's first day of school. Also, the school is underwater. That's what these all sound like to me.
I think you've caught on to the key to making it onto the blacklist. There was one that you wanted to mention, like the Bob Ross one.
Yeah, there's a movie about, like, it's like basically the rise of Bob Ross. And I would love to see that because I love Bob Ross, and not even in like an ironic way that some people seem to love him. I just love watching, you know, those old Bob Ross specials where he's very soft-spoken and he's painting these idyllic landscapes and he's just like the nicest man in the world. Like, I'm very curious to see a movie about him becoming, like, he became basically this legend by doing this, you know, public access painting show. And the fact that he somehow became, you know, world renowned is interesting. So I would see a movie about, you know, that.
I don't want to sidetrack us here, but I do want to bring this up. Like, I feel like so many people, you know, at Halloween this year were dressed as Bob Ross. You go to Comic Cons, people are dressed as Bob Ross. I feel like this whole, you know, I don't feel like all these people watched Bob Ross as a kid or when they were younger. Like, is it hipster of me to kind of be annoyed?
Like, you knew Bob Ross before they knew Bob Ross.
Like, I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I do think there is some of that where it's like this ironic thing. I mean, you know, there was like the Deadpool trailer where he was Bob Ross. And I do think a lot of people just think it's funny. But I also think there are people like me who generally, you know, and you, like, we grew up with it and we have a general affection for it. So I think it's a mix.
Ben, do you have one last one to close us out of the blacklist?
Let me see. You mentioned Mattson Tomlin, and there was one that I wanted to highlight because he actually has multiple movies on here on the blacklist this year. One of them is called Kill the Leopard, and the logline is: a henchman turned terrorist has a bone to pick with an idolized vigilante. When he takes over control of a city skyscraper, the hero known as the Leopard comes to the rescue. But when both the terrorist and the Leopard are overtaken by the hostages, a kangaroo court evolves as the hostages navigate their complex histories with the vigilante. So that just sounds like wildly chaotic and maybe a commentary on modern superhero movies. I'm not really sure, but it sounds fascinating.
See, as you're reading that, I just hear the formula that Chris outlined in my head, like, being, you know, with other words. Like,
yeah, I think I gotta write that script. Underwater school on next year's blacklist. It's coming.
I think, Chris, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think a movie came out last year called My Entire High School is Fallen Underwater or something. Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Is it actually? I thought it was just a title. I didn't realize it was like literal. They were literally underwater.
I think that's literally what the plot of the movie is.
All right. All right. It's Bob's first day of school, but the school is on the moon.
And it turns out he's Bob Ross.
Yes, moon
based
school.
On a true story.
All right, we got it.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about this Marvel Netflix thing, because I know we've been talking about it in the past. We're still trying to figure out what happened here, who canceled these Marvel Netflix shows, and will there be a future for them? So, Chris, why don't you start us off and tell us, you know, what is going on here?
Yeah, this is a nightmare. I was saying in the Slash Film newsroom, aka our Slack, earlier today that I'm just going insane because it seems like literally every day the story changes and it's clear no one really has a handle on what's entirely going on here. First we heard, you know, not really heard, but first it was assumed that Marvel were the ones who pulled the plug on Daredevil. But now we're hearing from a cast member, Amy Ruthberg, is saying it was definitely Netflix who decided on this. Now, I say this in the story, and I want to point this out here. Amy Ruthberg had a very minor part on Daredevil, so much so that I actually had to look up who she was playing, and I've watched all three seasons. So I don't really know how in the know she is, but you know, I don't want to say she's lying. So let's say she's telling the truth, and she's heard it through the grapevine that definitely Netflix canceled the show. So now should I move on to Disney Plus?
Yeah. Tell us, what is the future of these shows? Like, could they go to Disney Plus?
All right. So when Daredevil got canceled, it came accompanied with this kind of cryptic message saying, you know, the stories aren't over and Daredevil will return in some capacity, which led everyone, including us at SlashFilm.com, to assume that maybe these canceled Netflix Marvel shows would end up on Disney streaming service, Disney Plus. However, a story came out a few days ago saying that due to like contracts, no Netflix Marvel shows can go to another network or another channel for at least 2 years. So legally, they can't go to Disney Plus.
And I beg to differ about that because the latest update actually came today in an interview with the Hollywood Reporter. The new head of Disney Plus, his name is Kevin Meyer, was asked about this, and he was asked specifically if he would consider reviving these Marvel shows that Netflix canceled. And he said, they are very high quality shows. We haven't yet discussed that, but I would say that's a possibility. So again, that it's pretty vague, but it does seem like now that idea is on the table that these shows could theoretically make the jump to Disney Plus. So, I mean, it's going to happen in 2020 or later if it does happen. But like, what the hell is going on here? Peter, do you have any insight into this?
I don't know. I predict later this week, we're going to have a quote from a Hulu executive saying that it's possible that the shows could end up there. This story is just going to keep on continuing. But I do know some people that have some filmmakers that have deals at Netflix, and that 2 years clause is a pretty standard thing there. Like if they want to make something with the property that they have signed up with Netflix, if they cancel it, they have to wait 2 years for a non-compete. So mm-hmm. That sounds reasonable. I am very skeptical of it ending up on Disney Plus because, you know, those Marvel Netflix shows are kind of more adult oriented, and we know that Disney Plus is going to be kind of more family friendly. And I think Disney has already said that they're going to keep like the more adult stuff on Hulu. So I feel like it's going to end up on Hulu, but you know, if it actually, I don't even know that. Like they could just end this because, for all we know, it sounds like I don't know. Reading between the lines, behind the scenes, you know, Kevin Feige's not involved in these Marvel Netflix shows. Jeff Loeb is kind of like heading those up, and there's kind of like some friction between those two factions, and Feige's involved with all the Disney Plus Marvel shows that are in development now. So I'm not sure, does Disney even want to save these?
Like, Peter, what do you think is the benefit of these executives? Like, are they trying to use this possibility as some sort of bargaining chip, or like, why would they not just outright come out and say these shows are dead for good? You know, what's the benefit in stringing everything along like this?
Well, the benefit is these shows, or at least Daredevil, has a lot of fans, and I think, you know, saying it's dead probably would upset them.
I mean,
do you really think they care that much though? Like they don't like what's the worst thing that could happen if they said it's definitely dead? Like what's going to, you know, what are they going to take to the streets and storm the Marvel offices? I don't know.
I wish we could know what is actually going on here, but I know Netflix has these massive NDAs. Like I was at the Magic Castle last night. I did some tricks for some people that work in Netflix, and they're working on an announced project in the future, and literally they're like, that's all we can say because of our NDAs. So I'm sure that we're not finding out about all this because of all the, you know, behind the scenes legal tape around it, but I'm also sure that, you know, within the next week we'll have an update on this situation. So stay tuned. Let's move on to another bit of streaming. Amblin Entertainment, Steven Spielberg's company, is turning Akira Kurosawa's classic Rashomon into a TV show. Ben, tell us about this.
Yeah, so Rashomon came out in 1950. It's like universally hailed as one of the premier pieces of Japanese cinema. It's widely considered one of the best movies ever made. You guys, even if you've never seen Rashomon, the effect that this movie has had on really all things, all aspects of popular culture has been almost unmeasurable. There's the term the Rashomon effect, which has been applied to any story that is told from multiple distinct perspectives, because that's what happens in Rashomon. It's a movie that takes place that explores a single event, the rape of a woman and the subsequent death of her husband, from a bunch of different points of view, and you sort of learn the subjective truth or try to get to the bottom of the subjective truth along the way. So that's the basic premise of the movie. And now Amblin Entertainment is making a Rashomon TV show. So it sounds like, from the descriptions that we have from Deadline's report, that they're basically just going to be taking that structure from the movie instead of actually retelling the exact events as they happen in the film. Because according to Deadline, the plan is to make each 10-episode season focus on a singular event told from multiple points of view. The differing characters' perspectives will allow the audience to come away with the truth behind each mystery. We don't know how many seasons they're planning, but they are basically just looking to use this storytelling approach as the foundation for a show that's going to be called Rashomon, which is kind of a weird move because, like, I know it's a classic movie, but are enough younger audience members going to understand that reference? So I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
I don't know. Like, I feel it is weird. It feels like a bit of branding that I don't think it's going to – the people that this branding would resonate with, I don't think this show might be the most appealing thing to. Chris, what do you think? I know you were kind of against this when this was mentioned in our news channel.
It's weird because, you know, several movies have been doing pretty much what this show says it's going to do, where it just takes the Rashomon effect and applies it to something else. Like, there was a movie called Courage Under Fire with Denzel Washington and Meg Ryan, which did this. And even, like, Gone Girl technically does this, where it tells one story from different point of views. So I'm fine with them borrowing that story element. It's just weird to me that they're going to go all out and actually call it Rashomon, because that's so specifically tied to the Kurosawa movie. I just think it's weird to use that title, but, you know, I guess I'll have to wait and see how it turns out. It's just my immediate knee jerk reaction is please don't use that title.
Yeah. The title is a little weird. The format of the show sounds like something that could be kind of cool. Just as, you know, a way to format, you know, each episode. But, you know what I was saying in the Slack channel, after doing this for 14 years now, I am not quick to jump on the outrage train, because I remember when, you know, they announced that they were doing a Fargo TV series with, you know, without the Coen brothers, I was outraged. And, you know, that's one of my favorite TV shows. I remember when it was announced that David Fincher was doing a Facebook movie, and we made fun of it, like, and that turned out to be, I think, my favorite movie of that year. So, you know, it's quick to judge, but it does seem a little, I don't know, a little weird that they're using the title of it, not like maybe saying it's inspired by Rashomon and not calling it Rashomon.
Yeah, yeah. And like, for an example of how this can go wrong, just look at the movie Vantage Point, which came out in, like, I think 2007, 2008. So just because that structure works for some things, it doesn't automatically work for others. But it sounds like, and again, we don't know, like, who is going to be directing or anything. We know that Daryl Frank and Justin Falvey, the co-presidents of Amblin TV, are executive producing this. But in terms of, like, actors and all that stuff, it's way too early to tell.
Okay, let's get to one last streaming story before we cut off this podcast. And let's talk about Charlie Brown. The new Peanut specials are coming to Apple. Chris, tell us about this.
I mean, yeah, that's the long and short of it. They're taking the classic Peanuts characters, Charlie Brown and Snoopy and all the other kids with their giant heads, and they're coming to Apple's streaming service. And they're going to be there's a wide variety of what they're going to make. They're going to make TV shows, they're going to make specials. They haven't really nailed that down yet. It's like an all-encompassing deal, and they're also going to try to make them educational. So, you know, there's something for everyone here. And
I know you've been very cynical about Apple's streaming service, whatever that is, you know, and all the programming that they've announced, but I also know that you are a fan of Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm overly cynical about it. I'm cynical about everything, Peter. It's not just Apple.
I don't know, but it seems like every time they announce a new thing, like I hear the groan, like psychically from, you know, through our Slack channel.
Like it's like Apple is making like a stew and they're putting every ingredient in the kitchen in the stew. It's like every show, there's no like through line. It's like, oh, there's a M. Night Shyamalan show and then there's a morning show. Now we're doing Peanuts. It's just really, it's hard to get a grasp on what they're doing. So on that front, I am a little, I wouldn't say cynical. I'm just like curious as to what the hell they're doing. But you know, as much as I love the Peanuts things, I haven't seen anyone get them right in a long time. I admit I have not seen that movie, which I heard is good, the recent Peanuts movie. But you know, I love Great Pumpkin, I love the Christmas special, and that's about it. Pretty much every other adaptation isn't as good to me. But you know, who knows?
Ben, you recently had like a whole day of like playing, was it the music from the
yes, the Vince Guaraldi trio. I've been going all out listening to that constantly this entire holiday season. And yeah, that music is so awesome and I would highly recommend it. But also, yeah, I did see the Peanuts movie that came out in 2015, Chris, and it's really, I mean, it looks very cool. It's like the visual effects, I mean, it's all like CG animation, but it's like if you're going to take those characters and apply the CG animation style, it looked about as good as it could look, and the story was about as good as you could expect from a Peanuts story. So if maybe the same people are involved there, I'm not sure who is actually involved with this, but it is possible to tell a decent Peanuts story in the modern era.
Yeah, I'm really curious what the style of this is going to be. I would love it for them to emulate the style of the original specials, the hand-drawn style. But I could also see them going, you know, with that, you know, computer animated style from that movie. Or they could do something like what those recent Mickey Mouse shorts and the new version of DuckTales does, where it's kind of like this retro-modern combination, which I'm sure would not be appealing to Chris at all.
I don't know. God, Peter, I hate that you think I hate I'm not that. People say this to me all the time. I swear I am not that negative. I do like things. Please, everyone, believe me out there. I like some things.
Okay, Chris, where can people find you online?
You can find me at slashfilm.com, of course, and on Twitter at cevangelista413.
Ben, where can we find you?
You can find me at slashfilm.com as well. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Ben Pears.
You can find me at slashfilm on all social media. You can find all the stories we talked about on today's podcast linked in the show notes and on slashfilm.com. This podcast, Slash Film Daily, is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please feel free to send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, or life advice for Chris to peter@slashfilm.com. That's peter@slashfilm.com. And go to our iTunes page, rate and review us, tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.